Welcome to Women in Politics, recorded here in the studios of WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond's independent radio. I'm Carol Olson, your host for Women in Politics. It's a platform to bring women together to talk about their engagement in politics, what's important to them, and what they want our representatives and delegates to hear. And on today's show, I have local community organizer and consultant Chelsea Higgs-Wise, the founder of the Liberal Women's of Chesterfield County, Kim Drew Wright, and Senator Jennifer McClellan, here to talk about post-election and what's happening next. So thank you all for coming. And really, I invited people here to start talking about the post-election. So excited or no?
Yes, so excited. Oh my goodness.
Excited.
So what do you think it means? I mean, I've really watched, you know, the Liberal Women of Chesterfield County and the resurgence of the Democratic Party really making a grassroots efforts to re-engage people. And then dealing with controversy within the party. Do you want to talk about, you know, what that rising has done?
Well, we were very excited election night. We actually went to a local restaurant and cheered for hours as the results came in. It's the first time that Chesterfield went for a governor since 1961. So I think that is very exciting. And, you know, Larry Barnett came very close. And that was kind of a heartbreaker, but I know we can win that next time. We were excited for Dawn Adams in the 68 in Chesterfield, who flipped that seat. And Sheila Bynum Coleman came close, too. So we were super excited to see those results come in.
Yeah, I was actually at home and the safety of my loved ones the night of the election, just because I was so worried. But afterwards, I was so excited. I was up early the next morning and immediately meeting just with everyone about what this looks like now. And I know that I really have been out there trying to get Black women in Richmond and Virginia out to understand what's going on in politics. And just to see all this representation, it gets everyone so excited. It's like, well, what do we need now? What do we do?
I think I'm probably the only one who thought all along we were going to win. But I think that's because you remember a year ago at this time, I was running in a special for the Senate, and I announced the Monday after the 2016 election. And it was right as the local Pantsuit Nation, Together We Will, Liberal Women of Chesterfield, all these groups were starting. And I saw in that race a number of women who had never been involved in politics ever coming to knock on doors and make calls in January, whether they lived in the 9th District or not. And I, in my gut, knew that level of engagement was only going to grow. And I saw that throughout the campaign. I was a surrogate. One of the campaign co-chairs for Ralph Northam was heavily involved with every race, really. And everywhere I went, I saw that level of engagement, particularly among women. And so I felt really good. I was shocked. I'll admit, I was shocked by Chesterfield. I was shocked by how many seats were picked up in the House. I think my best guess was going to be 10 if lightning struck. But when I saw how many women stepped up to run and how many women were stepping up to be grassroots activists, volunteers to support them, I had a really good feeling all year.
In the Pantsuit Nation that arose, and you came and spoke to the ones locally, and then they really splintered into multiple groups and, you know, every community, many communities, you know, other than just watching our country turn, you know, and just looking at engaging women more specifically, how do you think that's going to play out overall in the future? Is that wave going to keep going? Are groups like, I mean, you've gotten a lot of press lately, Kim, on Liberal Women of Chesterfield County. How do you think that wave is going to keep going? And what do you think that future of politics will look like with women becoming more and more representative?
I have to say that I was worried that after the election, like our energy would slow down, but it has not at all. It is actually, I feel like we're even more compelled to move forward. Before the election, we knocked over 50,000 doors, just our group alone, and we wrote tens of thousands of postcards. But now we're plugged into learning about the General Assembly, you know, and lobbying more and supporting the people that we did get in or helped to get in. I feel like we're still very plugged in. And I'm very excited about that. And I'm also excited that when we do get, like, the national press, that the feedback from around the country and actually from around the world is usually very positive and very much, that's awesome, keep going. So I think that we'll be around for a while.
Yeah, I think that I agree. And I think the challenge is sort of focusing that engagement and helping some of the new people to the process understand how the process works after the election. I mean, we are blessed or cursed in Virginia that we have elections every year. And I think all of these groups now understand the process of winning elections. And they are now learning the process of, okay, now how do we follow the General Assembly? There have been at least three trainings scheduled already. There was one that the Civic Engagement Table did a couple weeks ago. The Broad Caucus is doing one on Monday. The Commonwealth Institute did a policy summit last week. Indivisible Richmond is doing one. So now it is. You have the resources to follow what we're doing at the General Assembly if you just have a little bit of guidance. And so those of us who are in office are working with all of the new activists to make sure they get plugged in and understand how to follow what we're doing, how to make their voices heard while we're governing. And so I agree. I feel really good that this is not just a flash in the pan movement. I think we've seen a sea change.
I'm really excited with everybody that's getting involved, especially in the digital world, and really trying to make sure that we find a pathway to reach beyond the digital barrier. There are so many, especially people of color, women of color, mothers, that are not able to find these resources that she was talking about to get engaged. And that's a reality. And a lot of these women do vote. They want to know what's going on.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Women in Politics, produced in the studios of WRIR-LP 97.3 FM. On today's show, we're speaking with Chelsea Higgs-Wise, Kim Drew-Wright, and State Senator Jennifer McClellan. Now, back to our show.
So what is the easy way? I want to say easy. What is the easy way to get them the information that they need about how to participate and how to stay engaged even outside of the elections while not making them feel overwhelmed to just survive? Because that's where a lot of that population I'm talking about is right there just trying to survive, but still giving them a way to be involved with policy. So I'm really excited because that just means we have more people out there that are willing to go door to door because someone doesn't have Wi-Fi or a smartphone to get that information to them. So that's especially for people of color. I want to make sure that everyone that's involved in jumping in has that population in mind too while we're doing this work.
And you bring up that you worked actively to engage Black women
Correct.
Into politics. And right after the election, of course, the conversation on Twitter and Facebook was that Black women saved the party again.
Right, right. Black women for the win.
Do you feel like Black women are more engaged than normal? Or do you feel like that they really have had a voice all along, is that the world might be listening to it more now than
Definitely.
Before.
Black women have always had a voice. Let's be honest. Black women run social media, right? And social media is our digital world. It's our digital community. It is going to be our community. So many people don't want to engage on social media. And I'm just like, man, you guys are going to be left behind. So when we talk about Black women for the win, we already know that they have a voice on social media. So I would really love to continue to push that voice into policy as well. And what that means for me is understanding and boosting these women of color to understand they did save the Democrats. That, I mean, 91% of Black women voted for the win for us, for Virginia. And I really try and put out there that Black women are the highest population of starting businesses. We've got the highest education accomplishments now. We've got the economic dollar. Right now, we should be making all of the decisions. And we can, because we can also vote, which is different from a lot of Black men that have been disenfranchised with the criminal justice system. So at this point, I'm just like, hey, let's take all this energy. You guys are already running it. You're basically running the future of our community through social media. Let's go ahead and change that and add some politics so we can get everyone involved.
I agree. I would add sort of one thing. Black women have been engaged in doing the work all along.
Definitely.
All along. If you go back to the beginnings of the suffrage movement, Black women were there and were pushing for the right to vote. We just didn't get attention, and in many ways were pushed aside. But we kept at it. And last year, Black women voted overwhelmingly for Hillary Clinton. There is a little bit of a generational divide in that I'd say for Generation X, to a certain extent, which is my generation and older, we've done a better job of breaking into the establishment or figuring out how everything works and how to plug ourselves in and how to do the work. I think it's been a little bit more of a challenge for millennials, and I guess now there's Generation Z. And some of that's on us. And some of that, you know, I view Generation X as sort of the bridge. And so it's on us to make sure that we are bridging that divide so that millennials feel that they're part of the process, that they don't feel like they're having to knock on the door and say, let us in, that they feel welcome and are getting engaged in ways they want to. That doesn't necessarily mean the same ways that we did as Generation X or as baby boomers did, because we all have different strengths. We all have different modes of communication. We all have different focuses, but we need to support each other and make sure that all of us are helping each other succeed.
And I love that idea, because I want to flip that too, to make sure that those women that are engaged with the establishment are also engaging with the millennials.
Absolutely.
At our level as well.
Absolutely.
And that's why I keep pushing the digital community, because that's where the millennials are and that's where the grassroots are. That's
Absolutely.
Where the hack of the 2016 election happened. I mean, we've got to dive into it and take control over it. And so I love that she just brought up the history of Black women. I want to also just say my big piece is I constantly have conversations with women, white women, non-Black women, about the feminist movement and what that means, and when everything, the Women's March last year, and understanding the women's Black women in the civil rights movement, how maybe that wasn't something that we got enough credit for. We've always been there. So putting that voice out there so it's no longer a divide between us as women, and we talk about the history, we talk about the women that have an establishment, the women that might not look like us, the women that has these resources, and as Jen said, using that as a strength, because we could pull these people that know the digital world to help with the policy there. We could have their knowledge with policy to help with this. So I just love the idea of where all this is going, honestly.
Yes, and I also like to mention that the House is going to look a lot different this year, with the first transgender woman, the first Asian American woman in our House, the first Latina woman, and the first openly gay or lesbian woman. And so I think that's a huge win for progressives right there. Also, I'd like to mention the Equal Rights Amendment that we have been fighting for a long time. That there's going to be a bill in the House and the Senate for that. And we have a coalition of groups that are trying to make sure that our representatives know that that is important to their constituents. And people can go on Facebook to that page, which is VA Ratify ERA. And it has a lot of calls to action for, you know, postcards and calls, and really making sure that women and the men that support women through the state are pushing for that.
Well, we'll be having them on our show next month, actually.
Okay.
And talking about it. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Women in Politics, produced in the studios of WRIR LP 97.3 FM. On today's show, we're speaking with Chelsea Higgs Wise, Kim Drew Wright, and State Senator Jennifer McClellan. Now, back to our show.
Both Chelsea and Kim actually weren't necessarily politicians, lifelong politicians like Senator McClellan. So you are an example of women who had completely different careers and still hold those careers, but have become way more active in politics. Do you want to describe your journeys a little bit about?
Sure. I 2015, my husband and I decided to separate. I moved from Chesterfield to Richmond, and I said I wanted to change my life. I was a social worker for so long, and 2015 is when we saw a lot of Black men getting shot in the street with law enforcement, and that was something that really got me involved. So I literally started showing up everywhere in Richmond. I have a little one, she's 3, and our custody arrangement gave me a little bit of time while she was with him. So I decided to literally devote all of my free time that I didn't have my daughter to this movement. And then the election happened, and I just started showing up to places and hearing my voice, and I realized that this is what I want to do. So I try to say I'm in politics, but I'm also in community, and understanding the link of my role of that is being able to have these conversations with people. So my own personal journey was going on, but then the community journey also hit me and inspired me to completely change my life.
Yeah. And I'll admit, you know, I was completely apathetic before the 2016 presidential election results came in. I mean, I just felt like we were heading in the right direction. We'd had eight years with Obama. I thought Hillary was a shoe-in. I just didn't think that many people would vote for an insane person. I mean, I can put it out there. That's my opinion. So I was, I kind of had my head in the sand thinking, well, this is somebody else's job to pay attention to what's going on. I had no idea how important local government was, and I certainly have been awakened to that this year. And so I went from completely not involved in politics to it became my full-time job, and I don't get paid for it. So it's full-time with a lot of overtime, 24/7, actually focusing on liberal women in Chesterfield County and beyond. But if you are as upset as I was, and a lot of people were, the best way to fix that at a personal level, even to be selfish, is to be active and to feel like you're getting your voice out there. And so I think that a lot of people got involved because of that. It made them feel better on a very personal level. And I'm happy to say that LWCC is going to go national starting in January, because I think the need for that is all over the country. And even if it's just, originally we started out as a support group for each other, but what has happened is we've turned into a great support for our communities, which is awesome. And the more positive that can come out of this situation, the better off we'll be in the long run.
And what I hear from Kim, honestly, just listening to everything that she's talking about, is just not them supporting the community. They are the community. So they're supporting each other, which is truly how I feel like this should work. So that's really just so beautiful. And when I talk a lot about Black women, just for the record, I am a biracial Black woman. I say that because my mother is white, my father is Black, but society sees me as Black. So I say all the time, a biracial Black woman, it starts great conversations, which I love to have. But I grew up in Chesterfield. I grew up in white spaces. I was very comfortable in white spaces. And when I moved to the city in 2015, I grew to understand what my role is of trying to bring both of them together and give an understanding, because I have a privilege of being in white spaces and hearing what happens in behind closed doors and befriending a lot of people that don't look like me but have great intentions. And so I really love the idea of hearing that what's going on and hearing more people wanting to be involved and pulling out our strength. So my strength was using my voice of a biracial Black woman to try and pull together. So finding where you are, finding your strength and how you fit in to this movement, because everyone can play a role.
And I just want to say real quick, at the last meeting, I had a Muslim member come up to me and she said, Kim, before I joined LWCC, I had no white friends. She's like, I just was in my community. And now she's super active. And that just made me feel really good. If we did nothing else right there, we did bring some communities together. And I think that's awesome.
And as women, we've got to recognize that we have our own sub-communities. And we've got to do the work to bring those together as well.
So do you think that the emergence of the smaller or the engagement of community members into politics, even without the career agenda, is breaking down some of our self-segregation in culturally and racially and gender?
Yes.
We have a common goal now, I think. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not just and our slogan actually is each of our causes is all of our causes. And I said that at the first meeting because there was if you look at our president, there's a lot of different groups that have been hurt by that administration. And it's not just one focused on one, like people of color. It's not just focused on women. It's just not focused on, it's a lot of groups. And I think that does help bring those groups together. If we're smart, we'll all work toward the same goal because we all have the same goals.
Yes.
I mean, it's interesting. You talk about being a Gen Xer and looking at generations, and it used to be that music would bring us together or food would bring us together. And it's interesting that where politics used to divide us, that they may now be a tool to bring us together. So that would be interesting.
Yeah.
And Jennifer talked a little bit about or referenced that you work actively with these groups now. Is mm-hmm. that something new for the Democratic Party either party or?
Yes and no. I mean, everybody's different. And first, I want to slightly correct one thing you said when you called me a lifelong politician. Not really.
Okay.
Because politics has always, you know, it started as and kind of still is my hobby. You know, we're a part-time legislature. I'm a lawyer, is my other job, and I'm a mom is my third job. But I got active in politics as a kid, got interested in history, heard the call of John F. Kennedy to get involved after his death, joined the Young Democrats. And there were, and this sounds weird to a lot of people, but there are a group of people who got involved and got interested in politics and government because they saw it as an important force for change a long time ago. And I'm one of them. And all through college, all through law school, while my friends were at fraternity parties, I was knocking on doors and volunteering with the Young Democrats and volunteering on campaigns. And yes, and politics brought people together even then, but it was a small subset of people who saw how government was an important force for change. And most of us were poli-sci majors or government majors or knew somebody who was in politics or, in my case, was just a huge nerd who, you know, learned about it through history. And so what's been exciting to me is to see how that interest and understanding of the importance of government has now exploded to, you know, beyond this subgroup of people to the community at large.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Women in Politics, produced in the studios of WRIR-LP 97.3 FM. On today's show, we're speaking with Chelsea Higgs-Wise, Kim Drew Wright, and State Senator Jennifer McClellan. Now back to our show.
And so for people like me, when I first started running, I first ran for office in 2005, I immediately engaged with community groups because that's all I really knew how to do. I understood I can't win just by talking to Young Democrats or Democratic Party members. I need to reach out to the NAACP, the neighborhood associations, the fraternities, the sorority, you know, whoever. And a lot of different people who do that. But now there's so many new groups. And it excites me because now my role is a little different. Now my role is I'm in a position to help plug them in to the system if they want to be plugged into the system, to help them understand the system and improve the system so that everything gets better. And that's new, but it's very exciting.
That's very cool. And because I'm the person that apparently is really just going to keep pushing this digital community. The reason that is so important and more people know the importance of this is because the digital community has given them access to this information. They are seeing the access of all the news, the different bills that are passing, how people are truly getting hurt. And that now motivates people to be inspired. And that's all because of the access through digital world. So I love that influence. I just really want to point that out.
And I have to say, piggyback on that, you know, social media has certainly helped us grow at Liberal Women and get our message out and communicate and plan and all sorts of things and get information from other sources. And I think it's important that we do that because there's so much negative propaganda out there. Yeah. I mean, the president retweeted one, right? So you need to have that equal pushback, I think, of the positive and the actual truth.
Yeah.
Just as large on those on social media and everywhere we can get it.
This ends the first part of our interview. On today's show, we're speaking with Chelsea Higgs-Wise, Kim Drew Wright, and State Senator Jennifer McClellan. Tune in next week for part two. You've been listening to Women in Politics, recorded here in the studios of WRIR-LP 97.3 FM. To hear the show, please go to our blog at womenpoliticsva.blog. To support independent radio, to learn, volunteer, or donate, please go to wrir.org.